past Red Simpson in his runaway truck. He's got the fever.
Fever.
He's got the Freightline fever. When Pierce said, Red, what you carrying in that cigarette pack? I said, I got my second driver and he's gonna drive all the way back. It's a big black pill so long and round. To a driver, it's a West Coast. Turn around, it's for the fever.
Fever.
Out on Freightline fever. Oh, out here on this road, you pass a lot of them old country boys. I seen Carl Smith, Charlie Pry, Ernest Tubb, Bill Monroe, Conway Twitty, Waylon Jennings. I see Dave Dudley, George Jones, Porter Wagner, Bill.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Animal Voices Radio Show here on 102.7 CFRO Co-op Radio in Vancouver, BC, Canada. Today is Friday, June 17th. I almost said February. I don't know what that's about.
Doesn't feel like February outside.
June 17th here in Vancouver. And I am your co-host, Carissa Thorpe, and I'm joined today by Allison Cole.
Hello.
Alyssa Ray.
That's me.
And Tara Gardner.
Hello.
We're a full house today. And on today's show, we have Jenna McDavid from Love, which is Living Opposed to Violence and Exploitation, All Beings, who is going to tell us more about Love's Vegan Pen Pals project that I think we talked about, was that January or something, Allison, that you talked about it on the show? It was like a really long time ago.
It was months ago.
Yeah. So she's going to tell us more about that and how you can get involved, and it's... I guess it's taken off more than she had expected it to, so that should be really interesting.
Looking forward to hearing about that.
And then we will also be having Lindsay O'Donnell from the Wake Project on the show, not specifically as from the Wake Project, but just to sort of talk to us from her own experience about fish and their feelings and why it's not such a great idea to go fishing for Father's Day. Have you guys ever done that before?
Not fishing for Father's Day, but I've been fishing lots when I was young and stupid. Made to by my parents, but I mean, we'll talk more about that after. I certainly have some thoughts about that.
Mm-hmm. Great. Okay, so what's new this week, guys? Any thoughts?
The Canucks lost.
Yeah, the Canucks
ensuing mayhem in the streets of Vancouver.
I was at a friend's house and I could see the billowing smoke from their balcony, and it was like over like a few other buildings. So I was really shocked to see that you could see the mayhem from their place.
Yeah.
It was crazy.
I didn't really know what was going on. I had been in Burnaby, and I knew that it would happen if they lost. I think it might have, people are saying it would have happened
either way.
Regardless.
People say that hooligans were just waiting to do it either way.
Well, actually, I do believe that because they think like, oh, you got away with it in 1994, and if there's enough of us, how will they stop us? Mm-hmm. And then with the amount of people that were downtown, it just created a situation where it was possible.
People actually had riot gear.
Yeah.
They went down with like the gas masks or like the handkerchiefs, and they were prepared.
That speaks premeditation.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
I saw online in a news report yesterday that they're saying that it was people, a lot of people were from, that were actually rioting are quote-unquote professional rioters, and they came from Portland, Montreal, Toronto, and Seattle.
They get paid for rioting?
Well, like they do this.
Seasoned rioters.
No, I think it's like they know where there's going to be a riot, and they make an effort to be there.
Oh, why would someone, like, okay, so this is our segue to animal issues here. It's like, why would someone spend their time needlessly just causing destruction when there's other more important issues to worry
and
about in the world?
It wasn't even about anything.
It wasn't an issue. There was no reason.
Yeah.
It wasn't an animal rights protest where that just got out of control. It wasn't about anything.
Well, I know one of my friends pointed out was that during the Olympics, when they were targeting certain businesses, like they targeted the Bay and they targeted RBC, And the Bay was one of the ones that got hit the hardest. Yeah. So I think that the people that planned to go out and riot said, you know what, this is going to be a great time to take down the Bay again. So I think...
But why?
Well, I think it's part of like the bad history that the Bay has mm-hmm. in Canada. You know, they sell fur, all yeah. that bad
so
stuff.
So they were protesting fur? I don't think so.
It could be a link, I think. I think it could be a link.
Don't but, say that. They're going to come that, looking
that
for
really,
us.
That really puts a bad light on animal rights protesters, no, and it wasn't about fur.
Absolutely, but that's I'm just pointing it out mm-hmm. that these people came prepared, and the Bay has been targeted in the past, so not necessarily
convenient.
For fur.
It was on Georgia Street. Yeah. It was a big store on Georgia Street where all yeah. the craziness was going.
Yeah, but I'm just saying somebody yeah. brought it up on Facebook, and I was like, that's an interesting yeah. point. Yeah.
I found it kind of weird that, like, the newscasters were like, oh, now they're getting chapters, which they've all been waiting for. They've all been waiting to get the books. Like, these don't seem like educated people that are breaking down windows.
Actually, did you read what, who was it on, one of my Facebook friends said, no one's doing chapters. And I said, I guess it's not, I said, well, and I said, if I was into rioting and looting, I would do chapters.
Yeah, absolutely.
And my sister actually said to me, so would you, if you were into criminal activity, would you loot chapters? And I said, yeah, I would. And
knowledge
she said,
is power.
And she said, yeah, they would report on the news the vegetarian cookbook section was wiped out. So.
That's awesome.
I do think, like, the whole... whatever series or whatever's been I don't follow hockey, so I don't even know. But, like, the whole time I've just been, like, really frustrated that people have so much time on their hands to put effort into, like, holding up signs to honk horns about a hockey game.
Yeah.
But there are such real issues out there, and people scream at us when we do any sort of demonstration
get
or protest
job.
To get a job.
Yeah.
And I've seen people out there at 2 o'clock in the afternoon... Mm-hmm. that are holding up signs by the CBC to honk your horn for the yeah. Canucks. And it's like, if you have time for that, you should be able to put some effort
the animals
into
or
real...
or anything that's yeah. worthy.
Absolutely.
Like,
absolutely.
Some sort of human rights or...
Yeah.
Animal
like,
rights.
I think if everybody put an effort into an organization that they really loved, we could actually make a huge difference in this mm-hmm. world, you know? And for me right now, that's, you know, the animals, and I love the animals. I'll yeah. always be vegan. But, you know, people that aren't and people that, you know, don't do anything, you know, you should pick up a cause. Take yeah. something up, you know?
Do something. What's life yeah. worth living for if
exactly.
you're not doing... If nothing matters, right? Other than just yeah. making craziness in the streets.
They read all the news and they're yeah. like, oh, it's so depressing. Well, do something about it, you
yeah.
know?
Yeah.
Be proactive.
Exactly.
Well,
exactly.
And then people going out to clean up the mess and take back mm-hmm. their city after. I think that maybe some of those people have never done anything like that before.
Yeah, maybe this incited something
yeah.
in them. That's what I felt,
yeah.
too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, based on
really
sort of
good.
Like the outpouring and like the windows at the Bay that have been all signed and
yeah.
everything like that, like all
yeah.
the good stuff that has happened, mm-hmm. I'm hopeful that, because I think so many people went out to clean up that it's likely that they don't all normally do things like that, and maybe it'll get them
no.
more involved.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think that's good.
Yeah.
Did you guys see the story about... in China, apparently, some scientists have produced a herd of genetically modified cows that make milk that could substitute for human breast milk.
Oh my gosh, it makes me sick. Makes me so sick. I'm so upset about this.
Like,
you mean it would have the same enzymes and nutrients in that human breast milk has?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I didn't see that.
It's really, really upsetting.
It would have the same, it says in the article here from Yahoo News, that it would have the same nutritional properties as human breast milk, but with a taste even stronger and sweeter.
First of all, it's genetically modified, mm-hmm. for one. I mean, I'm against genetical modification of anything,
yeah.
you know. And two, it's exploitation of animals, you
yeah.
know. Thirdly, you know, humans aren't supposed to be drinking milk after infancy. Like, you don't see any other animal doing that.
Yeah.
We're not supposed to be doing that either.
Yeah.
It's not healthy. So, three reasons why it's
like
wrong.
Like, it's weird. If you wouldn't continue to drink your mother's breast milk into your 30s and 40s,
yeah.
then
yeah.
you shouldn't be
drinking
genetically modified cow's milk that comes out as human breast milk.
Yeah.
Are they marketing this for babies? Yeah. Is it like a child infant?
It says formula, a possible alternative to formula in a nation rocked by tainted milk powder scandals. But
mom's breast milk is best.
Yeah, isn't that what they teach you at the hospital and everything is?
Yeah,
they
tell everything you that you need is in your mother's breast milk. That's why it is there.
One thing that this milk is also going to be missing is the antibodies. Like, mother's breast milk is supposed to help babies against, you know, the flu and that kind of stuff, because it gives them the antibodies to fight off different flus. So, I mean, that's another thing they're not going to be getting out of that. There's just tons of stuff in mom's breast milk that they're not going to be getting.
It says
from
that
it's genetically modified stuff.
80% the same as human breast milk. So there's obviously some stuff that's missing, and it would be best.
If it's 80% the same as human's breast milk, how much percent is cow's milk that people are giving to their babies now? You know?
Yeah.
Like, it would be worse, right? It wouldn't be as good. It would, 20%? Yeah. Like, I'd like to know that fact.
Yeah. It's just really gross. I mean, the fact that we're genetically modifying these cows, and just to think of, like, it's just really gross thinking of, like, a cow's udder. That's where the milk is coming from, really.
So there's that advertisement or t-shirt or whatever it is. You wouldn't suck your, you wouldn't suck the cow's, what is it? You wouldn't suck the cow's
udder,
the cow's teats. So why do you drink
cow's milk?
Same thing.
Exactly.
Yeah. Except I do know someone who used to do that.
Oh, ew!
But having said that, we will play a PRA.
The Last Bastion against the CBC Barbarians, the longest-running classical music radio show in Canada, West Coast Classics. Rare and unusual classical music from all over the world, from 2,000 years ago to the present, all presented in its social and historical context. West Coast Classics, every Wednesday morning from 9 till noon on Co-op Radio.
You're listening to the Animal Voices Show here on 102.7 FM CFRO, and I have your weekly events listings. So on Wednesday evenings until the end of the summer, starting at 7:30 p.m., there's the Focus on Food film series presented by the Unitarian Church of Vancouver at 949 West 49th Avenue in Vancouver. We had Denise Swanson on the show a couple weeks ago to speak about this exciting film series that just started this month, and it's going to be continuing into the end of the summer. And it will be featuring lots of animal rights films throughout. The films showing each week will follow the new Oak Street Farmers Market to be held in the parking lot of the Unitarian Church from 3 to 7 p.m. each Wednesday this summer. So the film schedule for the rest of June is as follows. Next week on June the 22nd will be Mad Cowboy, the documentary. Have either of you seen that film before? It's an oldie but a goodie. Mad Cowboy?
I don't think
so. I saw Howard Lyman speak, but I haven't read it.
Similar,
or seen the
movie, but with, it's really good. I recommend it. I have seen it before. So maybe you want to check out the farmers market next week, and I'm thinking of actually doing that myself if I have time. And then checking out Mad Cowboy, the documentary. And the week after is not an animal rights-related movie, but I will mention it. June the 29th is Dirt, the movie. I don't know what that's about, but sounds intriguing. And then there will be more films coming up in the rest of the summer months, but those aren't announced yet, so I will be announcing them when those come up for sure. On Sunday, June 19th, that's this Sunday, from noon till 8 p.m., will be the very first Vancouver Veg Fest.
Yay!
As part of the Main Street Car Free Day, which will be at Main Street and 19th Avenue in Vancouver. So VegFest Vancouver is a day-long outdoor festival, which will be happening this Sunday as part of the Main Street Car Free Festival. At the festival will be live music from local vegetarian artists, vegan food vendors, tables for animal protection organizations, and much, much more.
And we'll all be there if you want to meet us.
Yeah, definitely. Best of all, it's entirely free to attend. And as Krista said, Animal Voices Radio will be there. So if you want to come out and meet us, we will all be there. Please come on by. You can even have your pictures taken with us if you like, or at least with me. I don't mind.
Are you going to dress like Santa?
Yeah, you can sit on my knee. But you'll have to give us a donation for that. But that can definitely be arranged.
As long as the police don't come
we'll
by.
We'll do anything for donations. I'll give you a kiss for $5.
We'll do anything for donations.
I'll do anything for donations.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, okay, so.
I'm going to we'll be doing also body have member art and face painting.
Yeah. Yeah, face painting by Alyssa by donation, which will be awesome.
And then we're also going to have memberships available, right, if you want to join Co-op Radio?
Definitely. So we will have lots going on there. We'll have a raffle, and it's going to be a lot of fun. And Chris is going to be beside us with Earth Save, and on our other side is going to be Liberation BC, and Tara's going to be there with Stop UBC Animal Research and with Animal Voices.
Yep.
So it's, you know, we have to spread ourselves thin because some of us are involved in other organizations all at the same event, but I think it's going to be a lot of fun, so I am looking forward to that. And anything else you want to say? It's the very first Veg Fest, so I think, you know, at least come
you don't want to miss it.
No,
definitely
Stop,
not.
Stop's going to be there with some goodies, too. We're going to be making some goodies, so want to check that out as
and
well.
What did you want to say a few words about the Earth Save presence? What shall Earth Save be presenting there?
We will be telling you all about how you can lessen your environmental impact as well as help your health and the animals with you don't really have to go vegan. We just sort of encourage you to eat less meat and more plants.
Moving towards a plant-based diet.
Yes.
Yeah. So what was the other thing I wanted to say here about VegFest? Oh, yeah. Just come out and talk to us. And if you want to talk about the show with us, we're going to actually have a speaker system playing our show throughout the day if you want to hear what it sounds like. And I think that should be interesting.
Maybe
and
we should have like a suggestion box or something too, so people can put show ideas in it.
Yeah, or that's just tell idea. Us since they will be there to talk to us, and I'll definitely be writing down. That's what I want to say too, is bring your suggestions, because people do sometimes send us in suggestions. This is a good time to engage with us in person if you'd like, just to talk to us about the show and maybe what you'd like to see on the show. See, and you know, we do take your suggestions and put them on the show. So if you have an animal or vegetarian related event coming up that you would like to have announced on the show, please email us the details at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com or post it on our Facebook page, which is called Animal Voices Vancouver. And that's all I have for events.
And on the line with us now, we have Jenna McDavid of LOVE, which is Living Opposed to Violence and Exploitation. And she's going to talk to us more about the Vegan Pen Pal project that she started. Hello, Jenna.
Hi, how are you?
Good, how are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah. Do you want to start by just telling us a bit about LOVE, and then we'll move on from there?
Yeah, LOVE, or Living Opposed to Violence and Exploitation, is a online collective of vegans and vegan-minded folks. It started about 3 years ago now. Basically, there were a lot of disgruntled and unhappy animal activists regarding the state of current animal activism. We really wanted to bring an intersectionality focus to what we were doing. You know, not only speaking about animal abuse and exploitation, but also the abuse and exploitation of people of color, of women, of queer folks. We wanted to kind of draw the connections between animal rights and human rights, and we weren't finding that happening in a lot of the mainstream animal rights organizations. So we founded this safe space online, but also hoping that people would come to discuss these ideas and then proliferate them in real life in their communities at home.
That's great, because I know that that comes up a lot, that people, when you are an animal activist, people say, you know, what about human rights? And it's like, why does it have to be that I don't believe in human rights just because I believe in animal rights? You know, I got
Absolutely.
A guy was yelling at me the other day because I reported him to the police for locking his dog in the car and it was hot. And he was swearing at me and saying that I needed to focus on something more important, like maybe women's issues. And it's like, it's
women's issues.
Yeah, I think he was being sarcastic and rude, but
that is a women's issue. It,
I know.
It affected you. You're a woman.
Yeah, I was like, that doesn't mean I can't deal with other issues as well. So that's really awesome that that's what you're doing. And what sort of response has it been?
It's been very small. It's been a very tightly knit group of people. Mostly myself and three others founded the collective, and then we've amassed a bit of a following and other blog contributors online. I think that we've had a few light bulb moments. I know for me, I started out as a vegan when I was 17, and then that was kind of my gateway drug into feminism and into queer liberation and into a lot of the other social justice movements, and so I really wanted to discuss that somewhere in a safe space where people weren't going to be shouting at me, which was my experience at a lot of protests and demonstrations, and where if we were wrong, it was okay because we were learning together and we were growing together, and there was, you know, a theoretical space of non-judgment and a place where we could work out these ideas and discuss them with each other.
So is it open then to anyone? You said it's online, so basically anyone can join?
Absolutely.
You and
yeah,
the discussion?
We have a web space right now at lovealbeings.org. Because it's such a small readership, we're finding some issues with continually creating new content. But in recent months, we have created a video that we're asking people to download and share or use and tabling and demonstrations. We have the Vegan Pen Pals Project, which I'll be discussing with you today. And, of course, we're always open to other ideas and contributions from other folks. I think a lot of us are just facing burnout and a lot of other things going on in our lives that keep us from being as attentive to the website as we would like to be. Mm-hmm. But
are you looking then for people to help contribute to the website?
Absolutely. We're always looking for more people to write and respond. We're actually thinking of changing the format of the website right now a little bit just to be more focused on the video and on the Pen Pals Project, things that are flourishing versus the blog, which is a little quiet these days. But if someone wanted to write in with an idea or a suggestion for a blog post, we, of course, would welcome that. We do have some pretty stringent guidelines for what goes on the website. We have a mission, a vision, and a safe haven statement that we require all of our contributors to read and respond to. And then, you know, depending on the topic and what the person wanted to write about, of course, I would love to consider those ideas.
That's great. So I guess that would be the place to start for people, is to read your mission statement and all of that and get to know you a bit better and see where they could fit in. But that's
excellent.
Absolutely.
We have a lot of writings on the site as of right now. Like I said, we've been around for about 3 years, and there's been 4 to 5 contributors throughout those months. So if you want to see what we already have and see if anything that you would like to write about would fit in, please email me at jenna@lovealbeings.org.
Awesome. All right, so moving on now, can you tell us how and why you started the Vegan Pen Pals Project?
Yeah, this is pretty much my baby. I had found that as we were founding the Love Collective, and more in general just as a vegan and a social justice activist, it's really important to have support systems in place for those days when you come home and everybody feels against you and you don't have anyone to talk to about these things. And especially, I mean, I'm pretty privileged to live in New York City, where there's a huge vegan community, events and protests and support groups going on all the time. But if you're in the Midwest or somewhere with a smaller vegan community, or if you're a new vegan who hasn't really tapped into those resources yet, it can be kind of daunting to adopt this new lifestyle, or even if you come into a new understanding of veganism, as I had, you know, connecting those things with social justice movements all over the world. It would be really nice to just have a place to go or a person or two to have on your side and discuss these issues. And I had ambitiously started a Vegan Buddies project based on something that Viva UK and Viva USA had started a few years ago, hoping that if we got people to write in with their geographic locations, we could pair them up in groups of three and have them go do vegan things together. But we were just so small, we were having a hard time getting people from the same regions to sign up. And so a Pen Pals project felt more feasible at the time, given our readership. And so we invited people to write in, and then regardless of where they lived, they could be paired up with somebody and they would exchange handwritten letters or mixtapes, photographs, postcards. I've seen a lot of things come down the pike, and I think it's been doing really good work.
That's awesome. I know that I really love mail, so that's sort of why the project appealed to me. So that was why when Allison told us about it a few months ago, I was like, I want to do that.
I know you have a pen pal now. We're working on getting things rolling for you.
Yeah, I like that. That's one of your loves, mail.
Yes. The only thing that I'm worried about right now is there is a strike at Canada Post right now, and I might not get it very quickly.
I've heard about that. Hopefully we'll be able to work around it if that comes to pass. But
all right. And so how long has the Pen Pals Project been underway?
We're coming up on about 6 months now. I believe that we launched the project in January of this year.
Okay, so can you sort of just explain to our listeners how it does work?
Yeah, definitely. So Love in general has a focus on safety and making sure that people are comfortable and happy and content in their relationships and the work that they're doing with the world. So I actually opened up a P.O. box here in New York, and I asked people to write or fill out an application, which is available on our website, that it just includes some of their interests, their age, where they are in their vegan lifestyle, whether they're brand new or they're not there yet or they've been vegan for a million years. I asked them what some of their favorite indoor and outdoor activities are, what their lives are like right now. And then I have amassed this database of all the people who've submitted applications, and I go through them and I pair people up based on those interests that they've submitted, and then one person is designated to write first and one person is designated to receive first. And so the person who writes first will send off their letter. We give them about a 30-day limit just to keep things moving. And they send the letter here to my P.O. box. I retrieve it. I read the letter, not thoroughly, but just enough to make sure that people are who they say they are. And we have some participants as young as 9 years old. And so just in the interest of safety, I kind of monitor what goes in and out of the program. Mm-hmm. And then I, because I am the holder of all the addresses, will then send those letters on to the person who had been chosen to receive. And the cycle starts all over again.
Awesome. And so I know when I sent my first letter, I also sent a stamped envelope as well.
Yeah, that's very helpful and not required. Of course, I want this to be cost-effective and accessible for everyone, but always helpful because I am kind of the head mistress of this program, so any time I have to send a letter, I am paying for it out of my pocket, but it's something that I believe really strongly in, and I'm happy to do that.
So is it possible then for people, because you also said that you rented a P.O. box, which I know can be kind of expensive, or is there a way to donate to Love if people would like to contribute to helping you with the project?
That's really sweet, but I actually, Love has a non-budget policy. We have found that a lot of the activist groups that we've encountered, sometimes when they start getting a little too big for their britches or they start relying on donations, that their focus shifts away from what they may have originally intended it to be. And we really never wanted to have to answer to donors as a way to keep ourselves afloat. And so I guess the best thing someone could do if they wanted to contribute would be to send me stamps or send me envelopes. A few of our, especially our domestic pen pals here in the United States, have sent books of stamps because sometimes international pen pals are unable to get stamps that we can use here in the United States. So that's always really helpful. But otherwise, you know, like I said, it's a labor of love, and I'm happy to take charge of this.
Wow, that's amazing. I've never heard of anyone having a non-budget.
It's an interesting it's an interesting model. Is it modeled after anything that you've heard of before, Jenna?
I don't believe so. We just, a lot of the founders had worked as employees of animal rights organizations before this and were a little disenchanted with the way they saw things moving once donations and donors became the central focus of nonprofit organizations. And I think that's true across the board. And so we, because we are so small, it seemed manageable enough for us to just ask for people to, for example, that video, if they wanted to download it, we offered a copy that can be burned right onto a disc and then played in a DVD player or a computer. And so that obviously the person would be contributing the CDs to print their own, but it's just a way to keep things a little more grassroots and a little more manageable.
That's great. So what has the response to the Vegan Pen Pals project been like?
It's been really exciting, I mean, in terms of numbers and in terms of quality. We started out, when we first launched the program, we had a couple of blogs picked us up, a few other online animal rights resources listed to us, and we had about 100 people participating. And then Veg News picked us up and featured us in their newsletter, and we swelled to about 350 people participating, that's where we're at about right now. And I also would think that the quality of the letters has been really exciting, especially since I get to see everything that comes through. People are sending homemade CDs. People are sending photography and artwork that they have made for their pen pals. I have one really young pen pal. I think she's 10 or 11, and she drew this huge, colorful vegan composition that I, like, secretly wanted to keep and frame on my wall. So I just send it along to her pen pal. And yeah, like I said, we're still at about 350 people, so about 175 pen pals. And every time I go to the P.O. box and open it, and it's just bursting with letters, I'm really, really happy.
Wow. That must be really, really inspiring for you. Are you finding that it's helping keep you going?
Absolutely. I have a pen pal of my own whom I love corresponding with, and I have glimpsed at a few of the letters, and I see things like, I live in dairy country. I don't know another vegan. It's really nice to have somebody to write to. And some of our younger participants are the only vegans in their schools or the only vegans in their families, and so they are happy to connect with somebody elsewhere. No, you know, regardless of geographic location, just knowing that somebody out there is listening to them and supporting them through their vegan journeys, I'm really happy to be a part of that.
Yeah, and especially, I can't even imagine being like 11 years old, the only one in your family, the only one in your school. Like, you can't get yourself anywhere to meet other vegans. If there even was one in your town, how would you find them? What resources do you have, right?
Absolutely. I mean, I was vegetarian around age 9 and found it very lonely. And I'm really happy that now a new generation of vegans is having a different experience than that.
Yeah. I went vegetarian at 13 and didn't know what the word was until I was like 17. I just told people I didn't eat meat. And so I definitely didn't know any other vegetarians at all. And I lived in a small town. So I think that was sort of another thing. I do love mail. And then the idea of like, maybe I'll talk to someone in like Kansas who has no one around them. Like I've been there. So I know that it can be helpful to like, that would have been such a huge thing to help me along. I had the internet, though. I did have that when I went vegan, so that was sort of...
That's because you're very young, yeah. Carissa.
Yes.
I didn't have the internet. I'm curious, do you need to be vegan to be part of this Pen Pal project, or could it be someone who's leaning towards there and needs the support to get there all the way?
Absolutely. We accept anyone who wants to be a part of the Pen Pal program, and I'm finding that a lot of people have written in their applications that they've recently transitioned to vegan, or are vegetarian and don't know any vegans, and so really want to get some more information on that. Mm-hmm. And I take that into consideration when making our pairs. You know, I think I just recently put someone together, a brand new vegan who said she was struggling a little bit. You know, she has a limited budget and a family, and she doesn't always stick to her guns and needs a little bit of support. And so I partnered her up with somebody who's been vegan for 20 years.
I love the mentorship idea there.
Yeah, I think that's really helpful. They send each other recipes. There's always a little bit of cheerleading in the letters. You know, you can do it. Stick with it. Things are hard. It's okay if you falter, but, you know, remember the animals. Remember the social justice aspect of this, and hopefully that'll carry you on.
I just had an idea. You know the post secret where people send in their secrets and then he made a book? Do you think you'll make a book if people submit their letters back to you?
That would be really fun, actually. I don't know if people would want to part with their letters. I know that I have a box in my room of all the letters I've ever gotten that I keep.
Well, even to, like, scan them to you or whatever would be necessary to get it into a book, and then that could be a great advocacy tool for all sorts of animal rights groups to have at their booth.
That's a really great idea. I wonder if that would be something we could host on our website, just a compilation of all the letters and artwork and CDs and stuff that we have received. That's a really good idea.
That would be really cool. All right. I'm just curious, are you finding that it's a lot of women or like young people, or what does the demographic seem to be that are
responding? I have a math brain. I haven't run the statistical analysis or anything, but I would say it's about 70% women, 30% men. The average age of the participants is probably mid-20s, although I have, I think, someone in her early 70s and somebody around 9 as our youngest, and so we do have quite a spectrum. Yeah. And I'm grateful for that, because then when I get participants from across the board, I've usually got somebody that I can partner them with. It has worked out really well.
And is this international? Like, are you getting letters from everywhere?
Yeah, definitely. I think we have about 15 countries participating right now. New Zealand, Australia, Canada, United States, Spain, France, Brazil, Mexico. I've been astonished at how people have found this program from wherever in the world they live.
What about languages? Do they have to indicate what languages they can write in? Because that's a real range. It's awesome, though.
Yeah, there's a spot on the application to indicate. Mm-hmm.
That's great. Or if you wanted to even practice a language that you that you kind of know.
If you want to practice your Chinese.
I don't know how to write. I can only speak. But no, that really interests me, just for practicing my French. Yeah.
Yeah. Have there been a lot of Canadians? I'm just curious about that.
Like, absolutely, I think there has been, you know, maybe 10% or so from Canada. I think that's our next most popular country besides the United States.
Wow. That's great.
Yeah, it's very exciting.
Yeah. And why do you think the project is so appealing? Just because of the support system, do you think?
I think that's probably the main reason. A lot of people have asked why I'm not doing this in email form. And there's something special about sitting down, taking an hour out of our really busy day to write a letter by hand. And it means a lot more when you receive that in the mail. You know, so many letters start out with, "Oh, I was so excited to get your letter. It was way better than getting the bills that I normally get from the mailbox," you know?
And as you say, people get to send CDs or pictures.
Yeah, how would you do
that
if it was an email,
it's
right?
It's much more personal.
Absolutely. Yeah. I'm the kind of person who still makes mixed tapes for people. You know, I sit down for 2 hours and record each track onto a cassette. And so there's, you know, there's a lot of love that goes in.
A lot of love, hey?
Name is love, right? And I think it's just a little bit of slowing down this really fast-paced life that we all seem to live.
So lastly, do you have any further plans into the future for the Vegan Pen Pals project? Where are you going from here?
I'm really excited about your idea about having those letters posted online. Yeah. I think it'll be great for people, and the book, very exciting. But as for now, I mean, I'm only one person, and it is a lot of work, so I'm happy to keep it where it's at. Maybe someday when we're huge and vegans take over the world, I could do that Putties program where everybody actually physically meets in their geographic locations. But for right now, I'm really happy managing.
Well, I think you've probably sort of created that, but in a sort of traveling way. I think people will want to eventually meet their pen pals.
I think what you've created is unique, and it's even a better idea because no one else is doing it, and it does have value.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, thank you so much. Yeah. I'm really happy with it, and I know, like I said, I have a pen pal, and I find letters to her and from her very supportive, and there are days when I get home and I'm exhausted and cranky, and just to have that come to the mail and know that somebody out there was thinking of me long enough to sit down and write a letter, put it in the mail, spend that money on that stamp, and, you know, it makes me feel a little bit more tightly wound up in this community.
Yeah.
Vegans are awesome. I always knew it, and now I see it even more in this project.
That's great. So just one last time, can you tell people where they can get involved in the project if they're interested?
Definitely. You'll want to go to lovealbeings.org. And that's the main website for Love, Living Opposed to Violence and Exploitation. You'll find our video, our blog, a lot of writing on there. And then at the top, there's a menu navigation under Vegan Basics. And you can click on that and then the Vegan Pen Pals project.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Jenna.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks a lot. That was great.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Starting June 24th, the Vancouver International Jazz
Festival. You have $5.07.
The world. Steve-O, as well as Wynton Marsalis, are just a few of the big names. The 10-day Jazz Fest includes free gigs on Water Street in Gastown. There will also be events at the Centre for the Performing Arts, at Ironworks Bistro, The Orpheum, and The Vogue. Colin James, Trombone Shorty, Paco de Lucia, The Lost Fingers, Anna Mora, Madeline Peru, and The Bad Plus will also perform at this year's Jazz Festival. The 26th Vancouver Jazz Festival runs from June 24th to July 3rd with every kind of jazz imaginable, plus blues, funk, soul, Latin, fusion, electronica, and world beat. For ticket information, check out coastaljazz.ca.
Hey, you're listening to Animal Voices on 102.7 Co-op Radio in Vancouver. And this is a little bit of news I have for you. So first to England, where quite an uproar has erupted in a small hamlet because a local facility which breeds animals for vivisection has plans to rebuild and expand their current facility and include a new area that would house 2,000 beagle dogs. Oh, earlier this week, plans for the new facility were actually rejected at the East Yorkshire Council meeting. And activists in the area are calling it a victory. The current site is operated by B&K Universal and owned by Marshall Farms in the U.S. It's been actively breeding dogs, sheep, guinea pigs, and mice for 40 years on the site there. But these plans for expansion have awakened new criticism. This would be the first new facility of this sort to be built for 50 years. And B&K Universal is expected to contest the refusal and amend their proposal, which was rejected just based on like not big enough highways and noise pollution and that kind of thing. Although there was quite a big show of support there by animal activists. So for the animal activists in the area, the fight isn't over, and they'll continue to raise awareness and hopefully halt the expansion. And then to a British musician, Morrissey's current Scottish tour. One of the modern music's most iconic songwriters has convinced a host of concert halls around Scotland to forgo serving meat on his performances. This is happening, I guess, throughout, actually right now and for the next couple weeks, I think. For those who don't know, Morrissey rose to fame in the 80s as the lead singer of the band The Smiths. They had an album and a song called Meat Is Murder. Have you guys heard that song, or do you know The Smiths?
I actually haven't.
Yeah, I haven't,
I have
but
not.
we will soon.
I hadn't either. Like,
I've heard of it. I've seen the stickers and signs and everything, but I've never actually heard the song.
And you're going to play the album version at the end of the show?
The link you sent me.
Did I send you a link?
Yes.
I don't know.
I've got it ready.
Did I? Oh, okay. Cool. In August, there's a festival in Belgium that's agreed to sell only vegetarian fare on the day of his performance.
And that's awesome.
Their local
delicacy. That's progressive for Belgium.
I know, because their local delicacy is horse meat sausages.
Ew. Do you guys know that he won't come to Canada because of the seal slaughter?
Yeah, I read that, actually.
I didn't know that.
No, yeah, he refuses to come to Canada until the seal slaughter stops.
Well, good. Yeah. Good, an outspoken advocate. Not yet a vegan, but an outspoken advocate. Efforts to outlaw... Oh, now to the States, right? Away from the UK. Efforts to outlaw the undercover reporting of animal abuse in livestock operations appear to have stalled in Iowa and other states in the face of complaints that the proposals were intended primarily to protect the industry with little concern for animal welfare. A measure to punish those who make secret videos initially appeared to be sailing through the Iowa legislature, but after clearing the state house, it has sputtered out in the Senate. Similar industry-led measures have also faltered in Minnesota, Florida, and New York. Good news. Did you guys hear that a couple months ago that these seemed like they were going to go through? And it was pretty interesting. So what it would have done is prohibited recordings of farm animal treatment and punished people who take jobs only to gain access to animals for videotaping. They wanted fines of up to $7,500 or up to 5 years in prison.
I think it's that people have been going, if you want to outlaw people being able to show me what's happening on your farm, I have an issue with what's happening on your farm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It is, I know, like, sort of industry insiders have kind of an idea of, like, these people wanting to push a vegan or veg agenda. I just think that is just a really interesting concept. It's like, who has an agenda here? Who has, like, millions of money, like, dollars at stake? Not vegans and vegetarians.
Yeah, agenda? Our agenda is to expose the truth and educate. Yeah. Jeez, if that's an agenda, I'm happy to be part of that, you know?
Yeah, it's interesting. And of course, the Humane Society of the U.S. and I think, like, Slow Food USA, who is putting a lot of pressure and building a lot of... mass support for this to try and stall it. And they're very careful to avoid being critical of agriculture as an industry, to not make enemies.
That's always the case, because they're the people that buy advertisements and have a lot of power.
Yep. So that's about it.
All right.
That I have.
Thank you for that. Yeah. A reminder to our listeners that this is the Animal Voices Radio Show on 102.7 FM CFRO Co-op Radio. And we have on the line with us now Lindsay O'Donnell, who is one of the founders of the Local Wake Project, who we had on, I think it was in November, to talk about the package that they sent out to schools. And now Lindsay's just here today to join us in a sort of discussion about fishing and why it's not such a sport or a good idea for Father's Day this weekend. Hello, Lindsay.
Hi, Lindsay. Hi, thanks for having me.
Yeah. So can you just start off and tell us what you know from your experience about fish and whether or not they feel pain?
Sure. You mentioned that I co-founded a nonprofit organization. We work to raise awareness of the threats our oceans face. However, I'm personally not a biologist, so I couldn't tell you, for instance, the migration patterns of a particular species. But as an animal activist and a vegan, I have spent some time researching fish and marine life. And I've learned that there are two parts to pain. First, you have a neurobiological process of our nerves that communicate with our brain and tell us when there's something wrong or when you should avoid something. And second, there's an emotional response to pain that varies from person to person or animal to animal. And fish have a neurological system like ours that it can experience fear and pain. And pain is a survival mechanism that teaches living things what to avoid and what to avoid doing again. And some argue that fish lack the brain capacity to feel pain the way humans do. So that was the second part, the emotional part. But it's really still up for debate. Recent findings show that fish do have the emotional capacity to feel pain consciously. So fish have shown some astonishing behavior that I think most people would be really surprised to know. So I believe fish feel pain in the way we do physically, even if it's debatable how they feel it with what emotional depth.
Mm-hmm. I think it sort of, I think people don't even think of fish as having feelings, maybe because fish don't have the same, I don't know, I guess characteristics, because they're like a different shape and a different,
they
like,
don't they have don't, the same they don't facial have, yeah, expression they can't doesn't mean though that they don't feel
the same as like a cat or a baby or anything, right? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. One of the biggest things I've learned through WAKE is that ocean and its inhabitants are really out of sight, out of mind. And because we don't encounter marine life much beyond our place, it seems to be difficult to relate the abilities or emotions of aquatic mm-hmm. animals. I mean, whales are one of the most intelligent animals on the planet, and they're still hunted for food. But fish may not express emotions or emote them the way humans do, but I wouldn't discount that it's because of lack of ability.
Yeah.
Fish have been documented being able to solve problems, tell time, play with bubbles, and they even enjoy hanging out. So if you want to use a human attribute, scientists have found that some fish are just jerks that other fish avoid. So they do have a lot of human attributes.
Do you know anything about... I've heard before that a fish that's been, like, hooked and caught and released, like one of the smaller fish or whatever, that they remember being hooked. Do you know anything about that?
Well, being hooked would be a traumatic, stressful event mm-hmm. for a fish that usually ends up being fatal. Recent studies have dispelled the myth that fish don't have memory past 3 seconds. They can actually remember past up to 5 months. And one study found that fish react like humans do under stress, so they have increased heart rate, breathing mm-hmm. rates, and bursts of adrenaline. But most experience, or most times when you catch and release, it's fatal and the fish don't survive.
Yeah. And then they probably just get eaten by another fish or... Well, I guess hopefully they get eaten by another fish instead of just even more wasted at the bottom of the ocean.
Exactly. They'll likely die from their injuries. The wounds will become infected, or they'll build up an unhealthy amount of lactic acid mm-hmm. to distress. Or when we handle them, our hands remove the protective coating on their scales that shields them from bacteria in the water.
Oh, that's very interesting to know. And I wouldn't think that most people that are fishing even probably realize those things. Allison, you said earlier that you went fishing as a kid. Did you know
those
things?
Know anything when I was a kid, let alone what fish were feeling or not feeling. No, but you know, what I did know is, as a human being, even as a child, is that when my parents used to catch those fish, and there was two ways that they'd kill them. They'd either leave them in the bucket on our porch to languish. And I'd say languish because, as I say, as a human being, that's what it looked like to me. You know, you don't need the fish to tell you I'm feeling pain to see that the fish, his eyes are bulging out and he's like taking these really deep and aggravated breaths, just trying to get his oxygen, mm-hmm. which he can't get from our air. And you can tell in really slow breaths until they die a really slow death. You can tell that this fish is in pain. And so there was either that way or there was being clubbed on the head to death, which I'd have to say is probably the better way to go. But even that would...
I think to myself,
would I want to be clubbed on the head? Yeah. No, it would hurt, you know. Yeah. But if I had a choice, I would actually choose that rather than just suffocating to death. So as a child, I say that, you know, that is what I could tell. And I always knew there was something wrong with that. But as a really young and stupid child, I guess, or just someone who just didn't know any better, hadn't yet formed any opinions on the subject, I still was always uncomfortable with that. So that's what I have to say about
absolutely. That. Absolutely. But it's based on what you're saying about what fish lose from us touching them and hooking them and that they normally die. I think that completely, because isn't it like there's a law that they have to be a certain size or you have to throw them back if you catch them?
Yeah.
Like, isn't that law just like, oh, so...
You need a fishing license too, right?
Like that law does nothing.
Yeah, I mean... at all. I don't know the exact figures because it's really hard to track a fish once it's thrown back, but I would agree.
That's upsetting to me that most of them die. It's bad enough that you kill the ones that you catch and take home and eat and mm-hmm. all of that.
And if they're released too often, they have hooks in their mouth still, right? Yeah. So that's not very, I'm sure that's not a pleasant experience.
To live with that. No. I mean, we get like piercings, but we choose that, you know, and it's not a hook.
I think my dad has caught fish before that have had hooks already.
Probably.
In them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah. Yeah, and a lot of times these hooks get caught with other species, and a lot of, like, you know, birds and other marine animals end up being fatally hurt by what's left in the water or what gets cut off or by the line. So that kind of has an effect. And just to touch on what you were saying for Father's Day, it's funny because I think, like you said, many people go fishing with good intentions. Mm-hmm. They want to be outdoors. They want to enjoy some peace and quiet with some loved ones. And sometimes they teach their children to appreciate and admire nature's beauty. But it doesn't even occur that they're trying to instill an admiration for an ecology while harming its inhabitants.
Yeah.
And just to touch, I think it's interesting that when we consider fishing as cruel or whether it inflicts pain, I think we need to examine how we determine what's right and wrong. I know it's something that you touch on all the time on your show, but I think a lot of times we debate too much looking at the specifics of how they feel pain like us instead of applying our standards of morals and ethics across the board. So instead of picking and choosing what's convenient for us, it's either right or wrong. Like, for instance, you know, you were talking about the meat industry, or I was thinking, you know, the sled dogs and Whistler when everyone thought it was wrong and was outraged and thought it was ethically wrong. But fish are routinely pulled out of the water by the thousands to suffocate slowly. And I hate to use the term speciesism, but fish really suffer from that. So I think speciesism. It's time that we justify the same behavior towards different species.
Especially in terms of, like, vegetarians that still eat fish and yet call themselves vegetarians. And it's a such a sad state that we even have to come up with a different term for that to say, you only eat these
pescatarian
animals.
What I don't like about that when someone calls himself a vegetarian and they eat fish is that for all the meat eaters out there, like the most people, they then believe that a fish isn't an animal for some reason, and that doesn't qualify as flesh. And you can be a vegetarian and still eat that type of animal. I really don't get that. It's like a disconnect there. Like, how is a fish not an animal?
Yeah. And does that make you vegetarian? And then I've met some people that think chickens aren't vegetarian.
I know that too.
As well.
And then what's next, right?
Yeah.
What's next?
Exactly.
And the other thing too with that is when people do say that they're vegetarian, but they still eat fish, and then people have the perception that all vegetarians still eat fish, and I've been fed fish as a vegetarian
Oh, I knew.
I had just finished having a discussion. I do not eat fish. I do not eat chicken because that's crazy and not vegetarian. Those are animals. And the woman fed me fish, but it was cut up really small and it was in some rice. And I took like two bites and was like, what is this? It seems really, really strange. I think she might have just fed me meat. And I said, is this fish? And she said, of course that's fish. And I was like, we just had the discussion that I do not eat fish.
Wow.
And so that's sort of my biggest issue with pescatarians is if you're going to be a so-called vegetarian and still eat fish, you should at least, I guess, be calling yourself a pescatarian so people get that there's a difference. And the vegetarians who don't eat fish aren't sort of punished for it, you know, unknowingly.
And so that the fish aren't punished too, by all the wrong, you know, all the people that are being fed fish who don't eat
the so-called fish vegetable. Yeah. So what are some alternatives, you guys, that we could do instead for Father's Day this weekend if people were thinking about fishing and now they're not thinking about fishing, I hope?
Well, I personally already celebrated Father's Day, and we had a barbecue with drinks in the patio and veggie dogs. But if you're looking for peace and quiet and to connect with our environment, you can do everything that you would do without actually catching the fish. You could go hiking or kayaking or walk the seawall. Mm-hmm. I think that there's tons of stuff in BC that doesn't necessarily involve, you know, harming another live animal or another being.
And it's free to park in BC parks now. So
good point. Good point.
Oh, really?
Yeah. That was Christy Clark's big political move, is she took away the Alyssa's shaking her head right now.
Hindering.
she stopped. It does kind of make sense for this year is the 100th anniversary of BC Parks, I guess, being called that. And so she took away the parking rates, and you don't have to pay
to
park
to
there. Yeah. You still have to pay at Stanley Park, but everywhere else you're
That's
all
what
right.
I was excited for.
What's the point?
Stanley Park.
What's the point?
But yeah, I think there are a lot of great alternatives, and you brought up a really good point, Lindsay, that people are just looking sort of for peace and quiet and getting back to nature, and I think maybe some sort of an ecology tour or something, or maybe going to the wildlife refuge to find out about animals.
Well, I say visit your local animal sanctuary. Yeah. I was at an animal sanctuary a few years ago for a work party, and we had a father there. It was on Father's Day, and he had told his family that all he wanted for Father's Day was to go to this sanctuary and basically pick up after the pigs and be connected to them all day, which is beautiful. Yeah. Beautiful, because talking about reconnecting with nature and that, what better way to do it than to rather take away from the animals but to give to them.
Mm-hmm. And for people that don't know where that is, that's in Mission, and it's the Hearts on Noses Sanctuary, if you are interested
in going
there.
That's where we went to. Yeah.
They're so smart.
Yeah. So those are some really great ideas. So thank you so much, Lindsay.
Thanks, Lindsay.
Thank you.
Once again, it's been a pleasure to speak with you.
Well, thanks for having me on.
Yeah. Thank you.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye.
So you are listening to the Animal Voices radio show here on 102.7 FM Co-op Radio in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. Next week on the show, we will have a feature interview with either Deborah Probert or Peter Fricker from the Vancouver Humane Society, and the exact person will be confirmed next week. They will be speaking about the rodeo, and specifically their current campaign against the cruelties of the upcoming annual Calgary Stampede Rodeo. So rodeo time, you guys. It's always this time of the year, I think, that, you know, that these issues are brought to light. And
definitely, do you know when the rodeo is?
It's in July, the Calgary Stampede. So they have some campaigns and actions that they're asking people to do, and we'll be talking about that next week.
Nice.
We'll also be speaking with Karen Duncan. She's the president of the Vancouver Orphan Kitten Rescue, who will be speaking to us about their work that the organization does in rescuing cats and kittens and the issues surrounding this. And they have an upcoming event that they want to talk about. We here at the Animal Voices show modestly ask you to keep connected with Animal Voices via the World Wide Web. You can do so by signing up on our Facebook page, Animal Voices Vancouver, and you can also join us on Twitter at Animal Voices YVR, and please do send us your suggestions and comments about the show either on Facebook or via email at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com, or come by VegFest Vancouver, Vancouver VegFest, this weekend at the Main Street Car Free Festival at Main and 19th to give us your suggestions in person. Also, please do check out our website, animalvoices.org, where our shows can also be downloaded from. We are listening to Animal Voices on 102.7 FM, which I already said. So please tune in again next week. We've got The Smiths' Meat is Murder here to play for you that Alyssa was speaking about earlier. Thank you for listening, and remember to be kind to the animals.
Your kind, it's dead for no reason. treason is murder. And the carpet you cover with a smile is murder. And the turkey you bendingly slice is murder. And you know how animals die.
This is Radio Eco Shock with Alex Smith.
How can we know the time of crisis has arrived?
The signs are all around us. You know what I'm talking about.
You don't know what's going on. You've been away for far too long. You can't come back.
As our first guest, Ellen LaConte, says right on the book cover, why so much is going wrong everywhere.